This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Joined now by Ronna Romney McDaniel, the current chairwoman of the Republican National Committee and the former chairwoman of the Michigan Republican Party. Ronna Romney McDaniel, thank you for joining us here on Mornings on the Mall.
Good morning. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. Since the last time we talked, a lot has transpired in politics, and I want to start off with just something that has been that obviously captivated our attention last week. The President of the United States had this dinner with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Not long after that, it kind of sounded like he was edging towards maybe passing some sort of Dream Act without wall conditions. And is it your sense, at your perch at the RNC, that Donald Trump is becoming a Democrat?
Not even close. The president is pragmatic. He recognizes that to get things done for the American people, he's going to have to work across party lines. Of course, we don't have the 60-vote threshold you need in the Senate to get things done. And he's focused on getting things done. And that's actually what people want around the country. They want to see Washington finally start getting things done that'll help their lives.
All right, well, let's talk about getting things done. The big push this week, a couple pieces of legislation. One of them is tax reform. What's the next thing we can expect to hear from the Republican Party on tax reform?
Well, the president's been laser focused on this. He's been traveling around the country and recognizing that we need to bring tax relief to the middle class. We need to lower our corporate tax rate so that we're competitive with the rest of the world. You're seeing that discussion taking place in Congress, and they're going to come out and I think have the votes to get this done, but they're working across party lines to hopefully find relief for the middle class of this country.
Go ahead, Mayor.
No, I was just going to say, you know, what always bothers me when I hear this from politicians is they're always going to help the middle class. Everyone thinks they're middle class. And when they never define what middle class is, and what bothers me is what's middle class in New York is not, or D.C., isn't middle class in Wyoming. You know, there's such a difference. How do we define middle class? How do Republicans define middle class?
Well, I think that's a fair point. It is different state by state. Obviously, cost of living and the tax burden in each state is different. You know, some of the numbers that I've seen is a family of making $55,000 a year would get close to $5,000 in tax savings. That's a huge relief for a family. Obviously, the other part of it in lowering the corporate tax rate and also small business taxes is going to help boost our economy and bring jobs and wages to the United States. So everything that's in this package, and we haven't seen the final details, and those are being worked out, is intended to boost this economy. I mean, we've been in an anemic recovery under Barack Obama, and President Trump is focusing on kickstarting growth. And this tax reform package is essential to doing that, along with deregulation and good trade deals.
And, you know, we're hearing this week, we've seen some reports that there may be another push to get health care back on the agenda in the Senate with this Graham Cassidy bill to block grant funding to the states. What are you hearing about that effort?
Yeah, Senator McConnell has said if they can whip enough votes to pass that 50-vote threshold that he'll bring it to the floor. Obviously, we know that healthcare is failing across the country. Insurers are pulling out of marketplaces. We're going to have a lot of individuals with no coverage options going into 2018. This is something that people are very concerned about. Plus, premiums are continuing to rise.
Yes.
So I'm a big fan of sending it to the states for a lot of reasons. I think demographics are different in the states. Uninsured is different in the states. It's part of the 10th Amendment. Let the states be laboratories of how to make things work, see which states are doing it more effectively, and then other states can copy. I do not think one size fits all works across this country when it comes to health care.
So, yeah, you've got, I mean, it would be important, by the way, to reform health care as a first major piece of legislation before you say pass an amnesty for anybody who fell under the DACA rules. That would be a good step, I think, for the Republican Party. I want to ask about Bob Menendez. You've got this trial going on in New Jersey, this corruption trial. And the RNC is behind a push right now to campaign for what exactly?
Well, we want Democrats to go on the record saying that if Bob Menendez is convicted of the many, many counts that he is accused of, that they will call on him to resign from the Senate. And we are already seeing Democrats wavering on that. And it wasn't so far back when Ted Stevens had that same situation, a Republican senator from Alaska. And Republicans and Democrats said, if you are convicted of a felony, you cannot serve in the United States Senate. We expect Democrats to come out and say that they will call on Bob Menendez to resign if he is indeed convicted of these felonies.
You know, I want to talk to you about also Feinstein with the Russia probe. She got on CNN State of the Union and says that this could go on for a year and a half, if not more. Joe DiGenova was just on with us earlier in the show, and he said this goes on and on like this because the Republicans don't have the spine to put an end to this ridiculous Russia investigation. We don't know anything that's going on. We don't know what signs of any crimes going on in this. Why do we continue to humor this investigation?
Yeah, I struggle with that. I think this needs to come to a speedy conclusion. It is concerning to me to have this lingering as a shadow over the White House. The American people deserve to know that Donald Trump, as he was a candidate, did not collude with the Russian government. We haven't seen any evidence that supports that. And, you know, we have in our Constitution this right to a speedy trial, but these investigations can go on and on and on. And it is unfortunate, and it's wrong for the American people to have to have this linger. So it should come to a speedy conclusion. I do think Republicans need to take the lead on this and get this done quickly and remove all doubt as to this president and the fact that he did not collude in any way with the Russian government in this election.
And the final quick question in our rapid fire series of questions for you, Ronda Romney McDaniel, about Michigan. Could you see Kid Rock running for Senate there?
You know, I was at his concert on Friday in Detroit, and he did give a big speech about running for Senate. I don't see him running for Senate. I would think that I'd be one of the people he'd reach out to. He hasn't done that. But I like that he's talking about it. He's very popular in Michigan. He's given back to the community. He's helped the city of Detroit tremendously. He's one of those people who grew up in Michigan, became successful in the state of Michigan. Unlike Madonna, we consider her our greatest export. She's now in Portugal. But, you know, I think it'd be fascinating. He'd be an interesting candidate. But I'm neutral as party chair. That's my job. I should be neutral.
Look at that. Politically walking the line. I mean, I can see your partiality to Michigan, though. That's acceptable. Ronda Romney McDaniel, the head of the RNC, thank you very much for stopping by Mornings on the Mall.
Thanks for having me.
Look forward to having you back again soon.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Joining us right now is Governor Mike Huckabee. You know him, former governor of Arkansas, father of the White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And he has a new show on TBN called Huckabee. It premieres October 7th. Governor, good morning and welcome back to Mornings on the Mall. Happy Friday.
Well, thank you, Mary. Yeah, I have a new moniker now. I'm Sarah's dad. I'm getting T-shirts printed to say that. But I'm very proud of her, and she's got a very tough job, but I think she's up to it, and I'm extraordinarily happy to hear people come up to me everywhere and tell me they think she's terrific.
Well, you might be answering one of my questions, because on October 7th, your kickoff interview was with President Trump, and I was thinking, like, who does he know at the White House that he could get an interview with the President of the United States for your very first broadcast?
Well, it was Hope Hicks. She was very instrumental. You know, obviously, I used every connection that I could.
I love it.
But it's a great way for me to launch this show and to have the President of the United States. It kind of creates a little street cred to say, we're going to have serious newsmakers on the show. But I think when people see it, they're going to also understand that this is not just a one-hour political ping-pong match with Democrats and Republicans yelling at each other. It's going to be quite different than what people are used to seeing on most cable news. Almost identical to what I did on Fox on the Saturday-Sunday show, and this is going to be in that same time on Saturday-Sunday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern. But what we're going to focus on, even when we do the political aspect, is not so much what does the left say, what do the right say, but what is the solution? What is the goal here? Because I just feel like we're missing that. And I watch a lot of the cable news. In fact, I have a television that has four channels on one screen, so I can watch Fox, Fox Business, CNN,
yes,
and MSNBC all at the same time. And, you know, I find myself just saying, my gosh, everybody's screaming at each other. I don't know what they're saying. And so it's going to be a very civil type of show and really a wholesome show and try to bring the temperature down a little bit when we talk politics.
A civil discussion with Governor Mike Huckabee. By the way, TBN.org, you can find out what your channel listings are for that. Governor, just last question on the show for you. Are you going to be playing music like you did on the Fox News show?
You do not go to Nashville, Tennessee, where we're going to base this show, and not do music. In fact, there'll be quite a bit more music than we ever had on Fox.
Wow.
It's going to be an entertaining and, I think, a fun show to watch. A lot of different kind of features. But we have a house band made up of Nashville studio musicians that is just stunningly good. And then we'll have big-name artists that'll be on the show and up-and-coming artists. And so expect a lot more music than you're used to seeing on anything like this before.
Well, Governor, your first guest going to be President Trump, and one of the things that just is constantly a presence in Trump world is this Mueller Manafort investigation, and there's a lot to be concerned about the Manafort investigation the more we learn about it. What disturbs you the most about this investigation?
Well, the fact that when the federal government wants to come after you, they have unlimited resources to do it. And even if you're proven innocent at some point after years of being relentlessly investigated and embarrassed on national television for the fact that they are investigating you, even if you win, you lose because you will have spent every dime you've ever earned and ever will earn on legal fees. Your reputation is ruined. And the federal government, who, again, had unlimited resources to attack you, got those resources from you in the form of your taxes, and then turned around and made you spend your own private resources to defend yourself against the resources they took from you in taxes. I find this very troubling. And I think every American should be, even if this happens to somebody you don't agree with, even if it happens to somebody you're glad to see get theirs, if you will, it should alarm every American, because I think that we are bordering on an unconstitutional harassment and persecution, not prosecution, of American citizens. When we go to their homes at 4 in the morning, we roust their families out of bed and parade them in their yards in nightgowns, and we begin to go through and traumatize their families. This is happening. I've got friends who are right now either maybe vindicated but ruined, or some that actually ended up going to prison for things that you look at and you say, are you kidding me? And it really should be an alarm to Americans, because the government was never intended to be able to abuse its citizens this way. The Constitution should be protecting us.
Well, I want to talk about this raid, this middle of the night raid, for a moment. So you know, you've been a governor, so you've been responsible for law enforcement in Arkansas. I mean, does a financial crime of any kind rate a middle of the night raid where they pick the lock on the home and enter with guns drawn?
No, it absolutely does not. And you know, breaking down a door. We've had instances where Henry Juskowitz, the CEO of Gibson Guitar, was accused of using wood that came from Indonesia that wasn't somehow properly permitted. Now, think about this. Wood in his guitars, now it turned out that it was the same wood that was being used by Martin Guitars and Fender Guitars, but he was a Republican donor and they were Democrat donors, so they didn't get raided. They went into the Gibson guitar plant in Nashville with guns, with, you know, fully automatic weapons, SWAT teams, 50 agents swarmed, told the secretaries and workers to, you know, stand up, get away from their desks, put their hands up, scared the daylights out of them because they wanted to find out if Gibson guitars were making their instruments with some kind of wood that didn't have the proper permit. Now, nobody can tell me that it was necessary to show that kind of force. I mean, this is where you call the people's attorney and you say, we'd like to come and you know, find out if this is true. And you only raise that level when it's necessary to protect either the law enforcement officers or somehow to protect the evidence, none of which was necessary in that case.
And they're saying that this could go on for, you know, another 18 months. They're going back over a decade into Paul Manafort's history. Is this a committee in search of a crime, and they're going to find something come hell or high water?
Yes. The answer to that is, Mary, simply yes, because once you get into these investigations, again, if you keep searching deep enough, and now they're saying they'll go back 11 years into Manafort, my gosh, Paul Manafort had never met Donald Trump 11 years ago. This is the kind of thing that, frankly, is an abuse of our system. And this is why I say it ought to make every American angry, because maybe it's Manafort today, but it could be you tomorrow. And it just depends on, you know, whose ox wants to get gored. I think what alarms me is that we're so selective in these investigations. They're going after Paul Manafort for maybe having conversations, and who knows, I don't know what he did or didn't do. But I know James Clapper has testified before Congress that there was no unmasking. We know there was. He testified that there absolutely was not any surveillance of Donald Trump, and now we know that there indeed was. These are things that I think, if you're going to investigate something, investigate some of these people who use their government power in a very malicious manner. Investigate when the IRS went after nonprofit groups that they disagreed with. That's an investigation worth having.
Yes.
So why aren't we having those?
All right, Governor Mike Huckabee's brand new show, where he breaks down the news, and he's even going to make some. Starts October 7th on Trinity Broadcasting Network. Governor, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be with you guys.
Nice to have you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. Of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
All right, so we have the pleasure of being joined now by Bill O'Reilly, the former Fox News host and the author of the new book, Killing England, The Brutal Struggle for American Independence. And that's where I want to start. Bill, thank you for joining Mornings on the Mall. Can you tell us a little bit about...
My pleasure, Vince. Thanks for having me in.
Nice to have you here, sir. Let me ask you to tell us a little bit about Killing England and what you're writing about here.
Well, this book is the real story about the Revolutionary War and how difficult it was and how brutal it was. But more importantly for today, it deals directly with the men, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, who they really were. And now with the statues under attack, the statues of Jefferson in Charlottesville is the latest, you really have to know who these men were as people. And we really vividly bring that alive in Killing England.
It seems like today's like reaction to all of these statues is sort of defined by an intellectual laziness, knowing just enough, or at least allowing yourself to be convinced that these people were evil, and that kind of forces these like Antifa types to not even have to begin an assessment of who these guys were in context. Your trek through history, though, suggests, you know, these guys were much more complicated and obviously very essential to the American founding.
Excellent observation, Vince. Both Washington and Jefferson were conflicted men, particularly Jefferson. But what they did to give us the freedoms we have right now that we're talking on the radio was so extraordinary and so difficult. And Americans just don't understand because we get this whitewash in school. So I think everybody should know the truth about what happened, and the struggle for our freedom was indeed brutal.
Bill, Mary Walter here. I'm currently working my way through Legends and Lies of the Patriots, which is phenomenal. And I have to tell you, I think it should be required reading in schools because, again, it tells the truth about these founders and what happened to the struggle to found this country. How does that differ from Killing England? What's different in the two?
Well, we had three Legends and Lies books, the Old West Patriots, the one you're reading, and the latest one, Legends and Lies of Civil War. Those books are basically chronicles of events. The killing books, Killing England Now, they are very personal books that we uncover things about the people and the events that have taken place. This is the sixth killing book. Actually, the seventh. Losing even track of my own books.
I'm looking at them like there's
seven. Is the seventh killing book, and they're the best-selling nonfiction books in the world. 17 million in print, and the reason is because you can't put it down. It tells you things that it's not a chronicle of history. It's almost like a novel. Who they were, but everything is true.
So how do we get this generation that's coming up now interested in American history again? American history has really been put on the trash heap of education. How do we get it off of there?
Another excellent point, Mary. Public schooling in the United States, for some reason, because I'm a former high school history teacher, has said, well, you know, we really don't think that's important anymore. But almost every issue we deal with today, from Donald Trump to Congress, to the Antifas, to the neo-Nazis, has a historical framework. Framework is the word. And if you don't understand that, if you don't understand why the Nazis are so intense and that you cannot really have a conversation about anybody else when you're dealing with Nazis, okay, then you don't understand why things happen and why the controversies that we talk about every day explode. So it's so important for Americans to know about their country.
Bill, I'd like to ask you about something you posted to your Twitter account last night, shifting gears here. You posted an article from Newsmax, and it's an interesting piece, came out late last night, and it revolves around a woman who accused you of some things at Fox News. Prakita Burgess, and in the accusations, well, aside from the accusations, Newsmax has found that she has previously filed a false police report. She was arrested for that, charges of making a false police report on February 11th, 2015, where she claimed her boyfriend hit her with a gun and then later recanted that, saying that she had made it up. She was arrested for that. So also, the centerpiece of one of the allegations against you was that you had said something to her like calling her hot chocolate. Turns out this is a phrase she uses to refer to herself, and she said this on Twitter. And these are important pieces here, and this is not just, you know, her lawyers responded inside the Newsmax report, not disputing any of those things. What do you make of all of this coming out, all these many months later?
Well, when I left Fox News, I told my audience that no one was mistreated on my watch for 20 years, and that this was a political hit job, well-financed, well-organized, and that is the truth. So I immediately hired an investigative team, and we've come up with an amazing amount of things. And I applaud Newsmax.com for their investigation and coming up with what they came up with. It's stunning. It's stunning because you remember the hysteria that surrounded this case. And none of it was true. None of it. And now, over the next few months, we will start to tell the American people what a political hit job is and how dangerous this is to our democracy. If a person like me can be smeared at this level, and have to leave their position, then that can happen to anyone. So I hope everybody reads the piece on BillO'Reilly.com. We posted it. It's on Newsmax, as you mentioned, and you're very kind to bring it up.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to ask you a related question. Do you believe that this is what happened to Eric Bolling at Fox?
I don't know. I can't speculate.
Okay.
But I urge everyone to read Cheryl Atkinson's book, The Smear. It lays it out in a very clear fashion how organized this is, and there are millions of dollars involved in this con.
All right, thank you, Bill O'Reilly. I want to mention one other thing. You'll be able to see Bill and Dennis Miller this Friday in Baltimore. Bill and Miller, of course, will discuss the current political climate when the Spin Stops Here tour visits Royal Farms Arena on September 22nd. Tickets run from $65 to $125. Bill, thank you very much for stopping by.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me in.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here, sir.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
All right, joining us right now to talk about tonight's Virginia gubernatorial debate is Jim Garrity from National Review. Jim, good morning and welcome to Mornings on the Mall.
Well, Vince, Mary, thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, good morning.
So the polls between the two candidates, Ed Gillespie and Ralph Northam, are they're very, very close. One poll actually showing that they're tied. What do you think is going to be the big topic? What is the one thing that is going to make or break it for one of these candidates?
Sure. As you say, the results of these two polls we saw yesterday, one from the University of Mary Washington showing Democrat Ralph Northam just a little bit ahead, 44% to 39%. The Suffolk University not only had a straight-up tie in percentages, if you look into the numbers, they actually, in terms of the individual respondents, split perfectly evenly 202 to 202. So probably you literally can't get any closer than they did in that one. My guess is you'll see a lot of talk about the economy. I think the argument that's coming from Gillespie's camp, it strikes me as having a little more traction than usual. You may have seen the ads they're running on No Show Northam. If you look at Ralph Northam's ads that are running on, particularly in our area in Northern Virginia, they're still introducing him to voters. They're talking about he's a veteran, he's a doctor. They don't talk about him being lieutenant governor. And you go deep into that Suffolk poll, you find out that 20% of respondents said they had never heard of Ralph Northam. He's been lieutenant governor.
Wow.
What's he, in witness protection or something? and so you look even further, and they say, so would you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of him? 29% say favorable. That's not too bad. 22% say negative. But then there's another 29% they don't have an opinion or don't have enough, don't know enough about him to have a thing. So now we've got a point where about half the people in Virginia don't feel like they know enough about this guy to have an opinion. And you know, if you just came out of nowhere, if you're a first-time candidate, okay, that's perfectly fine. But we are 6 weeks from Election Day. Absentee voting starts at the end of the week. It's getting kind of late for Ralph Northam to be introducing himself to Virginia voters.
So then why is he doing so well in the polls?
Well, he's narrowly ahead, but I think if you're a Democrat, you should be a little bit nervous. You look back to 2013, Ken Cuccinelli was way behind Terry McAuliffe pretty much the entire race. He was getting demolished on the airwaves, not nearly enough money, and Terry McAuliffe was self-funding, and you know, every couple of weeks, he just did new deluge of attack ads. McAuliffe only won by 3 points, and he had trailed by nearly double digits in most of the polling. Then in 2014, Ed Gillespie was taking on Mark Warner, and this was another one everybody thought was going to be a demolished one-side race, 10-point lead, 11-point lead, and Gillespie only lost by 1 point, one percentage point. So, you know, if you're a Republican, you hang around low enough, you have a good chance of outperforming the final polls. And again, I'm not saying Gillespie's got a guaranteed win, but I think you look at these numbers and you say, okay, it's really close, and either one of these guys could take it.
This debate live at 7 tonight, moderated by Meet the Press host Chuck Todd. As we watch debates, we typically look for what's the thing that the candidate's going to try and stick their opponent with. Ralph Northam has pretty regularly tried to ask Ed Gillespie over and over where he aligns with Donald Trump. Do you expect that tonight?
Oh, absolutely. The gist of every attack ad from Northam is basically Ed Gillespie is just Donald Trump with facial surgery. You know, he's completely the same guy under the skin, which is, you know, if you know anything about Ed Gillespie, you know anything about Donald Trump, they're pretty darn far apart.
That's
in terms
true.
Of their personal style. I think you could say ideology. I don't think there's that much populism in Ed Gillespie. That's one of the reasons he just narrowly won the primary over Corey Stewart.
Right.
But, you know, Gillespie also makes the point that Northam has said that, I think he said, you know, something like along the lines of, you know, Trump is crazy and he's a narcissist. Well, look, if you're the governor of Virginia, at some point you need to work with the administration. At some point you need to be able to say to the federal government, hey, I need help on X, Y, and Z. And if you've spent, you know, a good portion of the time denouncing the president in the harshest terms possible, it really lessens the chance that you'll be able to get the kind of answers you want from the administration.
Now, you've pointed out that Ralph Northam and the Washington Post has pointed out that Ralph Northam, despite the fact that he has an ad encouraging people to go check out his tax plan on his website, doesn't have a tax plan on his website. What is going on there?
Yeah, they yanked that ad pretty fast. You know, one of the things that the Gillespie campaign is attempting to do, I think it's safe to say they're trying to out-hustle Northam campaign. A lot of ideas, arguments about, you know, outdoor sportsman economic development and addiction and recovery. You know, every couple of days the Gillespie campaign unveils some new plan. And their idea is kind of to say, okay, you know, whatever else you think of him, he's looked seriously at the problems of Virginia, and this he's got plans to solve them, whether you like those plans or not. Northam, this was an ad that only went up very quickly, and they yanked it because they kept saying, you know, there's this, you know, read my plan at ralphnortham.com. And then you go online, and there's a bunch of stuff on there, but there's not an economic plan. There's one, you know, there's one vague reference to lowering taxes in one area, but it's not like you can find it on the website. And so there's kind of a fun, you know, Republicans are enjoying pointing out, where's your plan? One of the great ironies is that, like, so, okay, once you made this mistake, okay, it happens, you know. As I joked, the left hand on a Democratic campaign doesn't know what the other left hand is doing, because they can't have any right hands on a Democratic campaign. And they end up with, okay, we forgot to put up our tax plan. So quick, put one up there. You know, scramble. Take 48 hours. Get something up there so you can point to it. And they have not done that. So it was just easier to take down the ad. And, of course, by this point, it's already been saved, and it's up in gift form and things like that.
Of course. And they put out a news release in April saying that a tax proposal would be forthcoming. And it's
any day now.
Still not there.
Any day now. Now, if you're voting really early, absentee, then you might miss out on it. But, you know, sometime before Election Day. It's Godot is the delivery man. So, you know, it might take a little while.
Well, Jim Garrity, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We look forward to the debate tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Always enjoy it. Thanks.
As Jim Garrity, National Review. It is 8:23 on WMAL.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. 5 to 9, Monday through Friday. Only on 105.9 FM. WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Who doesn't love pets? Who doesn't love dogs, right? Who loves, everybody loves puppies, although kittens
are
cuter.
Little
kittens
are cuter.
Some people do not like the dogs, apparently, in the district, because health inspectors have been cracking down on dogs at outdoor bars, you know, on patios, at bars and restaurants and things like that. And you can sit outside, and some people will bring their dog with them and sit outside and have a beer, maybe a little bar food.
Yeah. Well, people who enjoy life.
Anyway, in Virginia, in Arlington, Virginia, bars and restaurants can apply for an exemption to get a permit to allow dogs. In Montgomery County, Maryland, you can also get a permit and to have a dogs on the patio. So what we want to know is, do you have a problem with dogs at these outdoor patios on restaurants and bars? 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. I love it. I'm a big pet lover. I love seeing the dogs and on these outdoor patios at the bars.
And everyone I see who does this, almost without fail, has a pretty well-behaved dog that's just simply lying next to their chair.
Hey.
Or, you know, and some of these restaurants, I know in Alexandria, I've seen a couple of these outdoor restaurants where they have like community water bowls for the
yes.
dogs. Just like a big old bowl of water just waiting for dogs to come up and sort of lap it up, whether they're walking by the restaurant or sitting there. I don't know. I think dogs increase the happiness quotient in any given location. Having them like in an outdoor location at a restaurant, that's cool. And it's nice. It makes people happier, more cheerful. You have a better experience at the restaurant. It's not like you're rubbing your face on the dog and then eating your food. There's a dog there.
Let's go to LaTanya in Gaithersburg. LaTanya, good morning. You're on Mornings on the Mall. So what do you think about having dogs on these outdoor patios, not even inside?
I don't think it's a big issue. The only thing that I have a concern with is just cleanliness. My mother and I, we went into a restaurant and we noticed a dog smell. And we were thinking maybe it was coming from outside and coming inside. So we noticed the smell was on the dishes. So when we complained about it and we looked into it, it came to find out that the lady that was doing the dishes had her dog in the back. So I don't know if she was like periodically going to check on her dog and she was rubbing her dog. And instead of washing her hands before she washed the dishes, she just threw her hands straight into the dishwater. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's entirely possible, LaTanya, she ran out of towels. And maybe she was just using the dog, you know, just like rubbing the dishes.
I was thinking she was just letting the dog lick. Just let the dog lick the plates clean.
Well, that
I don't want dog smell in my dishes when I'm
it's
eating.
Hard to,
I'm with
it's
you on
hard
that.
To blame you, LaTanya. I think that's a reasonable quibble over the dog thing. your plates should not smell like the dog. We'll agree there.
Yeah, I'm with them with LaTanya. I've never had that though. I know what dog smell is not a good smell. Like wet dog is not a good smell.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
All right, so regulations are under review because DC's been cracking down on dogs on patios. outdoor spaces at bars and restaurants. And so now they're going to start to review the policy. The Department of Health says we're going to review the regulation. And a D.C. council member is considering emergency legislation to allow some dogs at restaurants and bars outside.
Count me among the people who are surprised that this even existed. I didn't realize this was a law.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I mean, and apparently no dogs allowed to be on these outdoor patios, these eateries in the district.
Let's go to Robert in D.C. Robert, good morning. You're on Mornings on the Mall.
Good morning. What if you're very allergic to dog dandruff?
Does that exist?
Like that?
Does that really exist? Dog allergies? Is that a real thing?
Why don't you ask my girlfriend that?
But I mean, is she one of these people that if she's outside and there's a dog, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 feet away from her, it's going to bother her?
It would bother her as much as somebody farting really bad 15 to 20 feet away.
That's a pretty aggressive flatulence. 15 to 20 feet. That's some decent range.
Who do you hang out with?
I'm sorry to hear.
It's the same thing. If you're allergic, you're allergic. Peanut allergies. If you're allergic, you're allergic. Five Guys doesn't let you take their peanuts outside because they may get in trouble.
I know. Have you ever eaten with somebody with a wheat allergy? It's like the most aggressive menu ordering you've ever seen.
Now, and NBC4's Mark Seagraves did a report on this about how popular dogs are in some restaurants.
Many businesses want to encourage customers to bring their dogs. So much so, some restaurants host yappy hours. But the D.C. Department of Health says that's against the law, and they've been telling establishments to keep dogs out or face a $500 fine.
Hear that, Mary? All your yappy hours are against the law.
Yappy hours are fine. I don't even have a dog, and I love yappy hour. I love it.
I know.
You get to
I'm
play
well
with
aware.
Other people's dogs. It's so cool.
I get 4 hours of yappy hour with you every morning.
All right. I'm done. I'm out. I am so out of here. I am so done with you. That's it.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM WMAL.